It's great to see such a goodly number of people in the room. We appreciate everybody taking some time out of the day to be here. Put your seatbelts on. We've got a pretty full agenda. Lunch is going to be optional today, so we're going to try to push through this agenda to get everybody out of here before dark. That's the goal. Just want to make all those expectations clear. We'll start with the first item on the agenda, which is a call to order and an invocation and the Pledge of Allegiance. So if you will, please rise. Before we do the invocation, I'm going to ask for a couple of moments of silence for the Perryton and Houston Fire Departments that both experienced a line of duty death since our last meeting. And before we do the invocation, I need to read this statement. No commissioner, staff member of the agency, or any other person in attendance at the meeting shall be required to participate in any invocation, and such decisions shall have no impact on the ability of the individual to participate in the agency's business. If anyone wishes to exit the room during the invocation, please do so. Please feel free to re-enter after the invocation. So now we'll do that moment of silence, and then we'll lean into the invocation.
Most gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you for this opportunity to come today and do business that hopefully, Lord, will honor and glorify you. Lord, we keep those families and friends and fire departments in our prayers of those that have lost loved ones, not only these line of duty deaths, but these natural lives that were lost. So, Lord, we lift them up. Lord, we ask for a hedge of protection for each and every person in this room as they travel home after this meeting and in their jobs as they continue to be the hands and feet. Lord, we thank you for this opportunity. Again, we just pray that every decision we make honors you, Lord, and that all the business we do honors you. We thank you, we love you, and it's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me as we pay our respects to the flag of our country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now the flag of our state.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one indivisible.
Thank you. You may be seated. Okay, we'll move on to item agenda number two.
Roll call for a quorum and excuse commissioner absences, if any. So we'll start with Commissioner Cantu.
Here.
Commissioner Coatney.
Here.
Commissioner DeVillis, I believe, was unavailable. Should be out for the meeting. Commissioner Friedag.
Also unavailable.
Also unavailable. Commissioner Glenn.
Here.
Commissioner Hamilton.
Here.
Commissioner Johnson.
Here.
Commissioner Morgan is here. Commissioner Smith.
Here.
Chairman Steelman.
Here.
Commissioner Vandegrift.
Here.
Commissioner Wade.
Present.
Commissioner Buford.
Here.
What is it?
Commissioners, I'll entertain a motion, if anyone's willing, for Commissioner DeVillis and Commissioner Friedag. They're both experiencing some health issues at the moment.
So moved.
Second. I have a motion by Commissioner Glenn, second by Commissioner Coatney. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposed? That motion passes. Item three.
Approve the commission meeting minutes for the August 15th, 2024 meeting.
All right. Commissioners, you should have had opportunity to review the minutes from our last meeting. If there's any questions, comments, concerns, let's talk about those now. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Motion by Commissioner Coatney.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Smith. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes. Item four.
Report from the Budget and Strategic Plan Ad Hoc Subcommittee. As the chair, the committee doesn't have anything to report unless staff wants to speak to the financial report.
I'd just like to say two things. We gave you a copy of the annual financial report, and then you also got a handout this morning of the quarterly report, just for your review.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, any discussion on that? All right. We will move to item five.
Reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to their specific organizational purposes, functions, activities, and objectives, including reports from TEKS, the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, the State Fire Marshal's Office, the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and the Firefighter Cancer Support Network.
Okay. This is my favorite part of every meeting. We get to find out what all great things are happening in the fire service in the state of Texas. So first up on this is Teets.
Morning, Commissioners. Randy McGregor with Teets. Few updates from Teets. Working right now on a potential collaboration with TCFP and IFF to deliver wildland urban interface training for fire departments. We'll be soon conducting a new or final inspection of a new AFG-funded fire engine for Brighton Firefield. We are working on pro board accreditation for Swiftwater Program certification. Also working to acquire a Fathom Swiftwater Rescue Training Tank and associated equipment. We're asking the legislature for $17 million to revitalize Disaster City, including an indoor training facility, adaptable collapse structure, concrete trench prop, and also a subterranean training site. We're about to begin construction on a five-story burn tower. It's about to start. We should have it completed by March, early April. We've got several infrastructure improvements going on, including a new fire water main system and a new propane storage system. Preparations are underway for the Teets Leadership Development Symposium in Frisco, January 20th through 22nd, 2025. We already have over 700 registered. Also, too, the 2024 Texas Fire Service Hall of Honor Lifetime Achievement Award Ceremony, which is January 19th, just prior, 2025 in Frisco. We have four new inductees this year. They include Dr. G. Kimball Bennett, Stuart Grant, Helen Johnson, and Willie Wisco. Also, we have the Teets Electric Vehicle and Stored Energy Summit, excuse me, January 7th through 9th, 2025 in College Station. Registration is $150. And also, too, we have annual schools planning conferences coming up. Industrial school will be January 10th, and municipal school will be January the 11th. Happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for Teets?
Chief, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Do you know when you guys are going to release the report on the EV vehicle on lithium ion battery research you did with Southwest Research?
I know someone who might have answered that. It'll be posted by the end of the week.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, Commissioners? Randy, thanks for being here. Thank you and Teets for your investment in the Texas Fire Service and the training that you guys provide. Thank you. Next up is the Texas Fire Chiefs Association.
Good morning, Commissioners. James Mallard, President of Texas Fire Chiefs. We've had a very successful year. We sold out every conference with the final conference coming December 10th through the 14th. It's the Fire Chief Workshop where we'll get all of our training hours for this organization fulfilled for Fire Chiefs. And we're working on passing the torch to Chief Joel Baker, who will be president next year starting January 1st. I'm just here if you have any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for Texas Fire Chiefs Association?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next up is the Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Morning, Commissioners. Jim Reedy for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. Really have nothing to report other than our good friend Glenn is probably a new father right now. So I hope everyone would offer him congratulations on the birth of his child. And congratulations to my friend and partner on NFPA, Commissioner Buford, at his appointment. So we're getting ready for the session like everybody else is, and the consortium meetings are going really well. So I think it's a good thing. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, next up is the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas. Seeing anybody moving? All right, next up is the Texas Fire Marshals Association.
Good morning. My name is Ryan Smith. I'm the newly elected second vice president to the Texas Fire Marshals Association. Just wanted to pass on that a few weeks ago we completed our association annual conference with just shy of 400 attendees and 40 vendors to the trade, so we were very happy for that turnout to come forth. And currently we're just preparing for the legislative session in all our committees and such. So I hope to be one, either myself or other individuals be present moving forward for this TCFP meetings. So any questions? That's the end of the report.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you. Okay, we'll next move to the Texas Association of Fire Educators.
Good morning. Jason Jackson, President of Texas Association of Fire Educators. We're gearing up for our 2025 conference, February 3rd through the 7th, in gorgeous Corpus Christi, Texas again this year. And we've added an extra day onto our conference this year for a full week of a conference. And we're going to focus on mental health and wellness, which I know this board is also doing, this commission is. And so we're going to try to do our part of trying to bring some of that into the training programs and training divisions and recruit academies and have those discussions with our membership during that conference. And other than that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jake.
Next up is the Texas A&M Forest Service.
Hey, good morning. Jared Collins, Texas A&M Forest Service. I just want to provide a brief update on our agency and fire conditions that we've seen across the state. First, our agency has had a slight restructure. On November 1st, we added a deputy agency director position, which was filled by Wes Moorhead. Three new division directors, which will report to him. Gretchen Riley is the division director for forestry and natural resources, and Jake Donnellan is the division director for field operations. I am currently serving as the division director for fire and emergency response. We've also added a chief admin officer and an assistant director for government relations. Had a lot of change over the past few years, but it's all been positive. August and October were busy for us, or at least steady. In August, we had 646 fires for a little over 27,000 acres. In October, which is typically one of our slower months, we responded to 639 fires for a little over 6,000 acres. Currently still have underlying drought in the majority of the state and expect La Nina conditions to bring warmer and drier conditions over the winter months, and do anticipate an active winter and spring for wildfires. And that's all I have.
Commissioners, any questions for the Forest Service?
Chief, how many acres have we burned in Texas this year?
1.2, well, a little over 1.2, and the majority of that being Smokehouse Creek.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is the National Fire Protection Association.
Good morning. My name is Rolando Hernandez, and I'm the new regional director for Texas for the National Fire Protection Association. And talks about 1970 and some of the new standards that were just recently passed by the Standard Council. So the handout I gave you is just an explanation of 1970, and it's a combination of 1971, 1975, 1981, and 1982. And the way it's broken down, you'll see in the chapters, chapters 5 through 9 cover 1971, and then 10 through 14 cover 1975, and it goes through 15 through 18, through 19 covers 1981, and 1982 is chapters 20 through 24. So you see a breakdown, and that's part of the new combination of for the emergency services. Those documents will be in a five-year revision. And so some of the technical changes that were in 1970 were the focus on protection against exposure to hazardous substance contamination, restricted substances, particular blocking hoods, ease of clean and disassembly, breathability for improved cooling in warm environments, revised glove sizing to allow better fit for women, and general improvements in clarity and consistency throughout the document. If you go to the second page, the Standard Council just recently, as November 16th, adopted those documents you see in your, on that list there. And I can provide you that list so you can post it onto your website. But see, there's some of the documents, and they'll be effective December 6th. So part of my goal is to, also as a new regional director, is to get more Texas service folks onto technical committees so that we have a better Texas representation on technical committees. And because we get a lot of West Coast, East Coast, and we don't have a lot of Texas representation. So NFPA sets out money every year for an enforcer program, where if the applicant who's applying for a technical committee is an enforcer for their agency, NFPA pays 80% of your airfare and hotel for the committee meetings. And if you have an alternate, you assign an alternate to as your membership. If you can't make the meeting, then that 80% is covered for the alternate also. So I'm available for any questions you have.
Commissioners, any questions for NFPA? Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks.
Next up is the Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts.
Good morning. Clay Avery, the Executive Director of the State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, or SAFED for short. In the land of emergency services districts and SAFED's world, we're getting geared up also for our annual conference, which is February 6th through 8th at Kalahari. Come one, come all. It's right after the Fire Educators Conference, so go to Corpus for that one, and then at the end of the week, come back up to Kalahari and Round Rock and have some fun with us and learn about ESDs. The other big thing, obviously, with ESDs being taxing entities, independent governmental entities, the legislature has an ability to affect us dramatically, and so we are gearing up for the session, like a lot of folks in here, next spring. And so we're looking at different issues that affect ESDs, annexation, taxation authority, service provider jurisdiction, that kind of thing. So we've just finalized our legislative platform and are looking forward to getting hard at work at that. Y'all have a full meeting, so I'll end there, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Commissioners, any questions for SAFED? Clay, thank you.
Thank y'all.
Next up is the Center for Public Safety Excellence. Not seeing any movement. Next up is the State Fire Marshal's Office. Gotcha.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Knight, and I'm the State Fire Marshal. Okay, so wanted to let you know that the Science Advisory Workshop Working Group met in August to review SFMO fire investigation cases. We have a planned meeting again in February of 2025. Also wanted to let folks know that we're putting out a save the date for a LODD symposium. It's August 14th in Waco, Texas. That is being put on in combination with the State Fire Marshal's Office, Texas Commission of Fire Protection, the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, National Fallen Firefighter Foundation, and the Texas LODD Task Force. That's the day before the Texas Fire Chiefs Association meeting conference, so it's want to tell them thank you for allowing us to use that day. It's from 9 to 3. Also, with LODD investigations, the Texas Fire Marshal's Office is investigating the Houston and Parrington LODDs, and in line with that, wanted just to kind of give some talking points about those. Want to make sure that we're consistently putting out the message that if there is an LODD, that the State Fire Marshal's Office be notified immediately, because we are statutorily required to do those investigations. Those include heart attacks, strokes within 24 hours from coming off of duty, obviously fire suppression, fatalities, suicides at the stations are also included in our the definition of the things that we're supposed to investigate. That being said, historically, if there was a suicide that did not happen at the station, that does not fit into our definition of what we are to investigate. However, we are going to, if we're notified of those, we are going to start tracking those. Right now, in Texas, they're not tracked by any one group, so we will start tracking those if we're notified. Obviously, notifying us of those are voluntary. So that concludes the State Fire Marshal's presentation, subject to any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for the State Fire Marshal's Office? Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Next up is the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And last up is the Firefighter Cancer Support Network.
Mr. Chairman, Curtis Dunn sent me a quick email with a report that I'd like to provide for him.
Sure.
In the last 3 months, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network hosted 80 state directors and mentors in Grapevine, Texas for a four-day training session. They have distributed more than 40 toolboxes across the state of Texas and 125 across the nation. Quick snapshot of the cancer problem as it sits today. In Texas alone, they've trained more than 350 firefighters on the cancer awareness. And they're about to publish the second edition of a white paper that updates statistics and the newest research in cancer. That's the end of the report.
Okay. All All right, Commissioners, I believe we've reached the end of item number five. We will move on to item six.
Report from Commission Representative to the Homeland Security Council.
As I said at the last meeting, I missed that. That was my 25th anniversary, and I'm happy to report I'm still married, and Boston was beautiful that day.
End of report, right? All right. Okay, Commissioners, before we go on to item seven, I need to back the truck up just a smidge. We have two new commissioners sitting with us today for their very first meeting. So I'd like to welcome Commissioners Buford and Wade to the commission, and we look forward to the work that you're going to put in to help us make the Texas Fire Service better.
Thank you.
So welcome aboard. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
All right, now we'll move to item seven.
Discussion on future meeting dates.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, in an effort to try to get a little better organized and make life a little easier for staff, I'd like to ask if we could set all four of your meetings for 25. That will enable us to work with all three committees and do the same. And the goal is to provide enough time between each of these meetings that staff has time to make notes and catch up and get the agendas in order and posted and all of that. So if we can, I'll propose some dates for these meetings, and y'all can discuss them. Obviously, we don't share the room, so we have the room. We can pretty much do what we want. Historically, you folks meet on Thursdays, and workshops when you have them are on Wednesday. So for February, that would be a workshop month. Looking at February 19th for the workshop and the 20th for the meeting. There are other dates available, but I'm trying to balance between all of the other things that are going on at the fire service across the state.
Commissioners, any immediate heartburn over that? Okay. Check one.
All right. The next meeting will be in May. There is no workshop. I would propose May the 15th, just to keep a good balance in everything that's going on, but there are other dates available.
Commissioners, any issues with the 15th of May?
That's my birthday.
Well,
I'll be good.
All right.
I can make it.
In that case, we'll sing happy birthday.
That's right.
That's right.
Okay. We'll move on to the next one.
August, workshop month, August 20th and August 21st.
All right. Any issues with that one? On the phone.
All right, we'll get to November. What we're looking at is November the 20th, and keep in mind we're trying to balance around home football games and other activities. It makes it hard to get hotels that time of year, but again, there are other dates available. Thanksgiving is the 27th, so I know we want to stay away from that. So November 20th would be our first choice.
Any issues with November 20th? Way easy.
The last note I have for this, moving forward, starting in the February meeting, this particular agenda item is going to get moved towards the end of the meeting so that it correlates with other agenda items and discussions, and there's always an opportunity to change them if we need to, but it's just going to make things flow a little better if we do that at the end of the meeting. Questions right in front.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to item eight.
Subjects for future commission meeting agendas.
Commissioners, anything anyone likes to add to our next agenda for discussion?
I'd like to add a discussion and possibly a presentation from a captain of the Austin Fire Department on near-miss reporting.
Okay. I would like to add some discussion and possible action on Chapter 435 for injury reporting, and looking at some possible opportunities for improvement to that process or some additions to that process.
Staff has one. We're going to have an agenda item for you on 439. It's to talk about ADA testing accommodations. We would like to recommend some updates to that, and we'll have all that ready for you at the February meeting.
Okay. Commissioners, any other items for our next agenda? Okay.
And again, this agenda item is going to move to later in the meeting.
We will move to item nine.
A report and possible action from the Health and Wellness Committee.
But we're going to try something different, and I'm going to do a better job in February, but we're going to put the three committee chairmen at one table with a microphone so they don't have to get up and walk across the room and all that. We packed them into one little table right now. We're going to make it better next time.
Daniel drew the short straw having to sit next to me here. I'm Doug Boker with Fulshear Fire. I wanted to remind some of the work that the Health and Wellness Committee has done since its formation several years back. The firefighter cardiac health program, the mental health initiative, and cancer videos that were put together between about seven different fire departments in the state. And then enhancing the firefighter injury report, although of most recent years, Grace has needed no help in doing that. She's done a tremendous job. Our new committee members, we kind of revamped the committee in response to the sunset legislation. Our new committee members are Homer Salinas with Mission, Daniel DeGeer, retired from Dallas, Ashley Watson from Euless, Michael Meyer from Houston Fire, Brian O'Neill from San Antonio, Chris Call from Portland, Adam Story with Cedar Park, Steve Green with Longview, Dell Albright from Murphy, and we have one open position that I believe that the commission is aware of, a waiting list for that assignment. We've set our next meeting. We had one orientation meeting in this room last month, setting our first like action meeting for January 16th in this room at 10 a.m.
Commissioners, any questions for Health and Wellness? Thank you, Chief Oakley. Next up is item 10.
Matters referred to the Commission from the Curriculum and Testing Committee, including A, report and possible action from the Curriculum and Testing Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pat McAuliffe. I'm the chair of the Curriculum and Testing Committee, Collin College in McKinney, Texas. We had a meeting here last week. We had our workshop to work on curriculum review, test questions, and some other matters. And I would like to report that we had 67 applications for the proposed emergency manager certification that we'll be working on. That's a voluntary certification, just as a reminder. From those applications, we worked very hard to try to get some regional distribution in our representation, and we arrived at the number of 17 members.
It's the beard. It's over-modulating. It's over-modulating.
It's just like, thanks for everybody's awake.
We'll try that one. Testing 1, 2, is that better? Not working? Says it's on.
There you go.
You're, okay. All right. Very good. All right. So we'll continue on. As I was stating earlier, we had our meeting and we selected our working group members for the voluntary certification of the emergency manager. We selected Aubrey Holmes, Brad Britton, Carrie Little, Jamie Galloway, Jeffrey Johnston, John Klingeman, Joshua Taylor, Ken Bell will serve as vice chair, Louie Havens, who is on our curriculum and testing committee, he will serve as chair of that group, Mark Sloan, Mariah Phipps, Mark Chadwick, Mark Morgan, Martin Ritchie, Nikki Bender, Paul Ayers, and Shaquina Nobles. All of them were sent a letter of congratulations. Those that did not exist, that were not chosen, were also notified this week. So this is kind of fresh news for everyone, but I wanted to share that with you. Once we get a date, then we'll get that group up and running. I just want to say this certification, voluntary certification, will be a little bit different in that there is no correlating NFPA standard for emergency manager. So we're going to treat this a little bit different than how we've done some of our previous curriculum. I'm going to wait before I share any ideas until we meet with that group to kind of get their input. I'm not an emergency manager. I'm not an expert in that field. That's why we picked 17 people who are. So we want them to help us, give us input on how we need to move forward to make this happen. So that's all I have for item A report.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions on item A? All right, we'll move to item B.
Discussion and possible action concerning updates to the ropes.
So you have in your packet chapter 16, the curriculum manual for rope rescue awareness, operations, and technician. So just some highlights of that. The awareness portion, and again, this is also a voluntary certification. The awareness portion, we recommend 8 hours for that training. The operations portion, we recommend 32 hours of training. And for the technician level, we recommend 40 hours of training. You all are already aware that the grandfathering period for rope rescue technician is underway, effective October 1st. Just some quick numbers to share with you on the awareness and operation exams. We have 104 that completed. We have 140 that have the applications were approved and paid. And we have 171 that are approved but have yet to be paid. For the ropes technician grandfathering exam, we had 91 have been completed, 129 approved with paid applications, and 157 approved with unpaid applications for testing. So already since October, when you add all that up, we're about a little under 800. So we knew this was going to be a popular certification going into it, and we've worked very hard to get that out. So that grandfathering period is in effect. Once that expires, then those who want to start teaching the certification program would then follow this curriculum manual. And I'll be happy to answer any questions about that.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions on the ropes curriculum manual? All right, this item is up for possible action. Now, Chief Wisco, the action will do what with it?
We'll just make it the curriculum.
Okay, that's it. Yeah. It's not it. Okay. Okay, Commissioners, haven't heard the presentation. Is there any other discussion or questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Have a motion by Commissioner Glenn, second down by Commissioner Hamilton. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Glenn and Hamilton.
Not Jones.
It's his alter ego. We will move on to item 10C.
Discussion and possible action on the rope skills manual.
So, Mr. Chairman, there's a little bit of confusion here because the skills session really, skills should not be in your packet for today's meeting. Our committee has not finally done the final review of skills, and I want to remind you that normally we do not bring skills to the commission for approval. And just a little history on that. The reason that we don't bring skills to the commission for approval, and we established a long time ago that if during the training process, as we roll out these new curricula, we discover that there may be some changes that need to be made in the skills, maybe even there's some safety issues, we want to be able to correct those out of the commission office immediately instead of waiting for your group to convene and approve. So it was done for a safety reason, if anything. So you do not need to take any action on item C. Sorry that it was in your packet.
Okay, no worries. All right, I believe that closes out curriculum and testing. Pat, thank you. We will move on to item 11.
Matters referred to the Commission by the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including A, discussion and possible action on the Rule Review 37 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 403, criminal convictions and eligibility for certifications.
Good morning, Commissioners. Daniel DeYeer with the Firefighter Advisory Committee. This is the second time we reviewed this rule in the last 3 years. It was one of the first rules we reviewed in 2021 after sunset. We also looked at this last month, and we did not see any additions, revisions, or deletions. So we're just leaving as it is and sending it on to you for your recommendations.
Okay. Okay. Commissioners, any questions? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Motion by Commissioner Coatney.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Wade. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Item B.
Discussion and possible action on proposed changes on the rule review of 37 TAC Chapter 421 Standards for Certification.
So commissioners, we reviewed this one as well, and we have several recommendations here. The first one was under 421.5, which was the definition of assistant chief. If you'll note that in your workbook, there, the proposed is to remove that. Just delete the definition altogether. It didn't really serve a purpose. Also, some departments, the deputy chief is on par with the assistant chief in other organizations, and it just added confusion to the document. So our suggestion was to simply delete it. The next one was adding language under 421.5. It's number 28. I think that's on page 109. We were revising that to include the terminology about an ideal age situation. So we were adding enclosed areas, comma, and ideal age situations, that, and then moving forward with the rest of the existing definition. This is referring to interior structural firefighting, but there was some concern from our committee as to other situations that produce ideal age concerns, and they're not necessarily in a structure. So that's where we were trying to add in that language, so that this ties into a few other rules and a few other areas. So we were suggesting that. The other recommendation is changing, this is just across the board on all of the rule reviews we've been doing, but we changed the wording for the State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association, SFFMA, to include firefighters. We've been doing that with all of our rule reviews, just bringing that up to current terminology. And then lastly was under 421, was specifying the mandatory certifications versus voluntary certifications. And you'll see that throughout this document in numerous places. We've made those revisions. Other than that, that was the big recommendations. The advisory committee is moving to y'all for approval.
All right.
And I'll answer any questions y'all have on any of that.
Commissioners, any questions for Firefighter Advisory? All right.
Mr. Chair. Staff would like to request you table this. We're still working through some necessary grammatical changes, and we just ran out of time. We have plenty of time as far as the rule review goes with the register, so if we could put this off till February, we'll have it all cleaned up and ready for you to see more corrections. But they're all grammatical changes.
Okay.
So moved.
I have a motion that we move to table.
Second.
And a second. Motion by Commissioner Glea, second by Commissioner Vandegrift. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Item 12.
Discussion on the International Association of Firefighters responding to the interface WUI training for Texas firefighters.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to start this off. We've got some representatives from IFF here today who are going to do a brief presentation. But as you all know, and as we heard from Chief Garnes earlier with the Forest Service, wildland fires and the wildland-urban interface is a problem in Texas. It's continuing to grow. It has been for about 14 years now. We became aware of a new program for structural firefighters that the IFF has put together that basically helps the firefighters have a better idea of how to use the equipment they show up with in a WUI event. And we've been talking with TEKS and the IFF, and we've got an idea on maybe getting some folks trained to be trainers here, and maybe down the road in a year or two requiring this, much like we've done the Words to Be Safe and other classes like that. It just seems like it's a growing, demanding issue on the state firefighters, and this training appears to be very relevant. So I'll shut up and let the folks from the IFF talk to you.
Good
Good morning, members of the commission, and good morning, everybody that's in attendance today. My name is Joe Tenike, and I oversee all wildfire interface fire programs for the United States and Canada for the International Association of Firefighters. I am a retired operations chief of CAL FIRE, having served in the department for over 35 years and 40 in the fire service with a stint in the Marine Corps right out of high school as well. My background in this that helps bring me here today and fail in retirement is I've served on major incidents as an incident commander, a Type 1 operations section chief, a Type 1 plan section chief, a Type 1 safety officer, a fire behavior specialist, and I've been a fire service instructor for over a quarter of a century. And so I appreciate everybody giving us time here to speak to you today because of the importance of what we have going on. The purpose of for this right here, the main thing and the plain things, as my pastor likes to say, is safe, competent response. That we want to keep our firefighters and members of our communities, our loved ones, out of burn centers and cemeteries. So seeing a gap that we've had in training in the United States and Canada to where 88% of the fire departments in both countries are going to be exposed to responding to wildfire urban interface incidents, but only 40% of them are getting any training, and a lot of that training is insufficient. The International Association of Firefighters, recognizing this, took steps and developed the Response to Interface Training Program. So we'll have a short presentation on that and be able to answer any questions you on the commission have or anybody in the audience. Again, thank you for carving out time, and I'd like to introduce a couple of my colleagues who are master instructors right here from the state of Texas.
Good morning, commissioners and everyone in attendance. My name is Johnny Davidson. I'm with the Local 3082 out of Round Rock, Texas. I've been a master instructor since 2018. Kind of helped with the inception of part of this program. I'm not lucky, I'm not retired. In a few short months, I'll be celebrating 30 years in the fire service. And just as Joe had expressed, this program is designed by firefighters for firefighters who are responding to that urban interface fire. So you guys are our audience and everyone in here as well. So we hope you enjoy this presentation, and we look forward to, I guess, coming up with a joint venture between all the agencies who are in this room today. Thank y'all.
Howdy, how's everybody doing? I'm Randy Denzer. I retired from the Austin Fire Department a couple years back as a battalion chief. I think it's going to be really important before you even see this presentation to understand kind of the birth of it and how Texas has had a major influence on this program. In 2001, Harry Evans, Chief Harry Evans of the Austin Fire Department, appointed me as the wildland training coordinator for the Austin Fire Department. Throughout the early 2000s, I became a pain in the raised butt about wildland training. I had a little bit of experience in my previous life, and I tried to bring it to the department and tried to get us trained up. And then in 2011, we all know what happened, right? The unthinkable happened. And I fought fire alongside of a lot of the men and women in this room. I've seen some faces haven't been able to say hi yet to, but I got to fight fire, you know, with a bunch of guys and girls in here. And we learned some really, really valuable, hard lessons. And the biggest lesson of all was that we weren't really prepared. No matter what we had trained to, it wasn't enough. We trained to our NWCG standards. The difference between NWCG standards and our structural standards was that there was no real good gap program. They tried to make some attempts at it, but the stuff that we had tried to do just didn't work. Because of those fires, there were so many lessons learned. I happened to be in Steiner Ranch with Jim Leonardos, and we stood there looking at each other, feeling very helpless as we had a lot of homes burning down. Next thing you know, we're bumped out to Bastrop. We were in Pflugerville for a while, went to Bastrop, Magnolia. Within 2 weeks, we saw 2,250 homes burned down, and that had a profound effect on me as an operations strike team leader and all the different positions I held. 2012, I stood up and started saying we have to do something. So Austin started training every firefighter to 131-90. That was the first big project. Because of that, the IFF saw what I had done, me and some of my partners here had done, and I got put on the Wildfire Task Force in D.C. Right away, I said we need to design something that is built by structural firefighters who understand the WUI, that is for the structural firefighters. Right, that's where this program was kind of birthed. It needed to be using the tools that we have in the toolbox the stuff that's available to us, and we need to learn how to be able to have safe tactics, strategies, and stuff to be able to do something during one of these fires. We built a design team, put a design team together around 2015. Michael Glenn, Commissioner Glenn will tell you, we worked really hard on getting some funding for it through the international, and two times now we've had unanimous votes for increase in funding to make sure that this gets rolled out to everybody. Along the way, we pulled in some guys into the program to help us develop it, Johnny Davidson being one of them, right? Before this was over with, this has a major influence by Texas firefighters. We brought two other guys in from Central Texas who also experienced those fires. So there's been a major influence on this program by Texas. I'm proud to stand here today because this is about 15 years worth of work for me. I'm glad we're bringing it back. We need to look at this. I want to make sure that none of our brothers and sisters are standing on top of a hill ever again going, I don't know what to do. Everything we trained fell short, right? So I'm happy to be standing here, and afterwards, if anybody has any questions, Joe, I'm so happy we got Joe on board. Any questions you guys have for me, just make sure you grab me.
So what we'll do is we'll get set up with a PowerPoint presentation. When I first came up here and shook everybody's hand, I passed out the thumb drives because I know that I'm a middle-aged male and I forget why I walk into a room sometimes, and I didn't want to get on the airplane and go home without leaving that with each of you. So we'll get started right here shortly. And if at any time during that somebody has a question on the commission, we'd be happy to answer that. Otherwise, we'll go through it and then we'll answer questions afterwards if that's acceptable, Mr. Chair.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, very good.
Tell me when you're ready, Joe.
Okay. So we're going to have Captain Davidson start off with the first slide, and it's our title, so go ahead there.
What's that?
Is this thing still rolling? So good.
All right. This will be a short video for everybody to take a look at, and it just kind of soaks, and it gives you the purpose statement basically in the video of what we're seeking to accomplish here for safe, competent response.
Today is another day of extreme heat across the country.
So I'm going to turn my back to everybody, so I'm going to come over here.
It's a crazy storm for firefighters. I must say, I'm the separation between urban, suburban, and rural communities keeps getting smaller. On the other side, the changing climate is causing record numbers of wildfires.
Tonight, the worst possible combination, drought and wind, fueling Colorado's most destructive wildfire on record.
The West Coast is engulfed by multiple fires raging.
And they're not limited to places like Fort McMurray in British Columbia, the Pacific Northwest in California. The risk of wildland events is high almost everywhere IAFF members serve.
We begin the drone video of a 16-acre brush fire in Blue Hills Reservation this afternoon, one of 41 such fires in the state this last week.
You can see in this incident the largest wildfire in the state of New Jersey in 15 years.
This is the largest fire in the last 100 years of the state of Tennessee.
Mandatory evacuations are now underway in Southwest Florida, where wildfires have burned thousands of acres.
The city's fire marshal said he had never seen anything like it in 20 years on the job.
The scorching heat combined with bone-dry conditions is also fueling wildfires, with almost 90 fires burning in 13 states.
This is our new reality. 88% of firefighters will respond to wildland-urban interface events. They present challenges unknown to traditional structural firefighting.
We're used to an urban environment. We're going to go to the wildland arena. We might not have ever seen that country. We can't see the topography because it's filled with smoke the whole time. So we're going into an environment that we haven't done the size of on. We don't know what it looks like.
There are over 40 strike teams just from Texas. This strike team will return in 14 days. A grueling 2 weeks fighting one of the country's worst fires.
Wildland firefighting also involves long hours, long deployments, and travel, with extended family absences, affecting regular duty schedules and members' behavioral health.
Dozens of crews are heading down there as we speak. Many of them walked into work earlier this morning, only to find out they would be heading down to California. They had no idea how long they could be down there.
Good
rescue crews from San Jose are heading to Idaho.
In North Texas, firefighters heading into the inferno.
Until recently, 60% of firefighters hadn't trained for the wildland-urban interface. That's fast changing, because the IAFF launched a new course to train for these events and strategies
San Antonio
required to effectively and safely fight wildland fires in an urban setting. The scope of training was recently advanced by grant funding from the Canadian government, while in the U.S., the IAFF is working closely with the administration to achieve the same goal.
You have to treat these events as when they happen instead of if they will happen. If you treat them as when it will happen, you'll prepare your folks to be able to operate more safely in this environment and ultimately save more homes.
The Wildland Urban Interface, coming soon to a community near you.
The Austin Fire Department just wrapped up training every Austin firefighter, and I believe a lot of the auto aid, mutual aid partners too.
Yep.
For this program.
We're glad to be here today because Texas is actually a trendsetter for the nation, and I believe that in implementing this training here in this state, other places in the United States and Canada are going to take a look at what you're doing here, and they're going to want to emulate it. And when they want to emulate it, they're going to want to save lives. It became more important to me this year, as important as it is, when my son and my son-in-law both went on the job for the first time this year with Cal Fire. I never pushed it on them. Actually kind of wanted them to go to college, but they both decided that they wanted to be second-generation firefighters. So we'll walk you through this PowerPoint as we go forth. And again, if you need to stop as well, we'll park for it to answer any clarifying questions either on the commission or if you're permission, Mr. Chairman, and the audience, we'll be happy to do so. So, Captain Davidson, go ahead.
Go ahead, Randy. So, as we've talked about this before, right, this is nothing new to any of us inside this room or anybody up here on this board. So, we begin to look at this as all-risk firefighters. Here in the state of Texas, we respond to everything, right? Hurricanes, wildfires, you know, tornadoes, things like that. So we designed a program for structural firefighters. It's taking that first new company officer who sits in that right front seat, giving him the tools and the knowledge on what to do when he would to show up to something like this. So through this, again, we beta tested this program here in Austin, Lewiston, Maine, Colorado Springs, back in San Antonio. We went all the way to Missoula, picked those guys' brains. We did some training back in Round Rock, out to Scottsdale, and even up in Kamloops, British Columbia. So I share that because this is everywhere across the United States and even into Canada. We wanted to make sure that this program was designed, and I talked to Chief Gates this morning, one station, correct?
Yes, sir.
We could go to your department and teach this, or as everyone knows, FDNY just experienced a fatality, and they're having wildfires inside the city of New York. And so this isn't just an East Coast or a West Coast problem anymore. It's across the nation. We're privileged and honored to get to develop this program. Go ahead, please, sir. What we try to tell everybody is, again, North America, this is an interface problem. We try to take out wildland, so because we're using structural engine companies. Guys and gals that ride rigs that are typically on pavement are responding to areas they're not used to responding to. So we share the phrase interface and intermix. To break that down, it's houses among trees, and then you get into trees among houses. And that's how we try to explain that throughout there. And then just the growth of Texas, right? It's spreading out. It's getting out into the urban and rural area. And us as firefighters are having to figure out how to manage those incidences with minimal water, minimal resources. And so, again, we come in and we just change the mindset of the guys and gals that ride these fire trucks.
One of the biggest hurdles we've had.
Randy, get a microphone set because they're recording.
So one of the biggest hurdles we had in the beginning of the development is everybody in the world thinks we're developing a new wildland program. This is not a wildland firefighting training program, I promise you that. This is a structural firefighter program on how to deal with the interface. But it does cover a lot of points in there, which I think that Chief Carnes and the Forest Service will be happy about. It does cover how we interact when it comes to be that time. But it is not a wildland firefighting training program. It's purely urban interface.
You can keep that one.
Tell me when you're ready to make.
You click and I'll talk.
All right, there you go.
So...
We have not rehearsed this.
No, we have not rehearsed this at all. Colorado Springs was 1,000 acres. I don't remember exactly how many homes it burned. It was 1,000 homes.
In 8 hours.
8 hours. This is what we experience here in Texas, right? These guys got firefighters from Denver. That would be like us responding all the way to Fort Worth or somewhere to go fight fire. We do it every day. But at least now we're going to have the skill sets, the training, proper PPE, and know what's going on, along with the biggest thing is terminology that we're teaching. So just as I mentioned, interface and intermix, this is it, right? Houses among trees, trees among houses. This is everywhere across the state of Texas. And this is what we're trying to equip the men and women with, the knowledge and skills on how do they, in just a separate half-mile distance, fight fire differently.
And we have, in our training, we actually teach some elements of how to manage and fight fire in the intermix versus the interface and back and forth. So there is a little bit of separation on some of the stuff that we do, but it's basically standardized terminology and action.
Yep. Good. So we show you this, right? I heard someone mention earlier about the East Coast and the West Coast. Nothing's taking place in Texas. We're going to put that on a map, with hopefully the approval of you guys and all you guys and gals out in the audience, because this is what we have to do to protect our brothers and sisters. We have an opportunity today and throughout the next few years to actually change the face of the Texas Fire Service and the fire service across the nation by giving our brothers and sisters this training. And again, as I spoke to Wisco, we would like to start that here in Texas. So,
if you could leave that slide up there for a second, take a look at it. And just guess in your head where the location of that wildfire urban interface fire is. Is it on the East Coast? Is it over there by where I come from, up in the mountains of Northern California? Is it here in the state of Texas? And just think about where that is. That's in Massachusetts, right there. And I was up last week doing testimony for the international regarding the OSHA rule on fire brigades, where they're going to make the rule changes. And I'm driving to New Hampshire. That's where we went to meet up there to get away from Washington, D.C. and all the distractions. And they were in red flag warning the whole time we were there and the whole way we're on the way back. And then on the way back to catch a plane to fly out of Boston and to go back home, I got an email from the chief of Jersey City, who I had met at the National Cohesive Strategy meetings in Atlantic City, and he wanted to talk to me about bringing this program there also. Unfortunately, it was right after they lost a firefighter on a wildfire urban interface firefighter. And Captain Davidson brought up the Fire Department of New York. They asked me to do an interview with USA Today over wildfires in the park that are becoming urban interface fires over there as well. So when I landed in Denver, I got off to the side to be able to do that. So currently, right now, on the East Coast, we're having red flag warnings and red flag watches constantly over there. And so it's something that everybody's just now becoming aware of, but a lot of the folks that are out there are highly intelligent, very committed, hardworking, dedicated, but they don't know what they don't know. When we talked to our folks in Lahaina, we went and presented this class out in Maui. They knew they were doing something wrong, but they didn't know what they were doing that was wrong. So what we can do with this program right here is teach safe, competent response so that they can be effective in safeguarding communities and loved ones and not go to those burn centers and not go to those cemeteries. Go ahead, Captain Davidson.
No, thank you very much. Just to kind of tag on to what the chief was saying, we got that call from the chief of New Jersey, but he had to lose a firefighter for that call to happen. And now this program is important to them, and we appreciate that. We don't want that here in the state of Texas, right? No firefighter should be the reason we start something when we have the information and the skill set to take care of it now.
We need to be the lead at this. Texas needs to be at the very top of this whole program, in my opinion, especially since a lot of it was born here based on those 2011 Labor Day fires. I would love to see Texas being the tip of the spear for this whole program. I know California has it. They've been doing it for a long time. But I think that everybody would look up to us to do it. Now, I will say this much. We just got back from Vegas. We were working with Vegas. I heard Texas referred to in a talk day before yesterday. I don't know if you were in the room or not. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, Texas, it's in the Midwest. But I don't think we're in the Midwest, right?
Right.
I've never been told we're in the Midwest.
I want to qualify that, too. We were not in Vegas gambling. We were at a we were at an instructional development conference that the IFF puts on annually right there. And the Carpenters Union has a huge training facility, and they hosted us at that facility right there. So I didn't want anybody to think we're flat backing and gambling right there.
All right, Johnny.
So, again, we just got to talk about New Jersey. This is 2016, and they were having those fires, right? And now we're sitting here in 2024. And they're finally calling us. Let's get ahead of this curve and stop these problems from happening. You know, who responds? Structural firefighters, right? When that fire leaves the brush and the grass and it starts burning homes down and destroying homes, we're responsible for that, okay? And we don't have enough resources around to stop when you're burning 10, 20, 30, 40 homes at a time. So we'll educate them on how to utilize those resources. We can't stop those fires, but we can do a better job of protecting our people and at least try to mitigate them to the best that we can.
This is an important slide that we're looking at right here. An example of folks not knowing what they don't know. On the left-hand side, you're seeing somebody in proper personal protective equipment, and on the right-hand side, you're seeing somebody, and unfortunately, that's a fire chief of a local government department in another state that's going in after some hose. I believe that's correct.
He was running in to save some fire hose.
Yes.
So, we want to change that mentality, right? And again, just give everybody the proper knowledge and skills to know
situational awareness.
The other good thing about, and we all know this in this room, about standardization, right? So I've been on three of the deployments to California. When we rolled into California, the guys, we actually, I was a strike team leader, but we gave this class very quickly to the first deployment to the car fire. So when we got there and the Cal Fire guys said, hey, we're going to do bump and run in these neighborhoods, it was seamless. And the Texas guys were there. They loved the fact that we all were able to work together, right? Because we were all using standardized technology, and it made a huge difference in how many homes we saved, a huge difference, at least 50% difference in the amount of homes we saved. And we were doing it a lot safer.
So again, we go back to explain. We're going to be doing stuff like on this left-hand side of the picture and not watching just thousands of acres burned, right? We lose valuable resources in Texas whenever that happens. We go to the panhandle. Those guys are losing the vegetation that feed their cattle. So these fires have a major impact, not only immediately, but sometimes for years and up to decades. We want to be able to stop that.
But we concentrate on urban interface, not wildland firefighting.
Now, having said that, we do tie in structured defense operations in the interface as part of perimeter control. That's the beauty of what we can do here. But the main thing and the plain priority of that is to do structured defense. In that last slide on the right side, that was Yellowstone in 1988. I don't know if folks remember that or not.
Ready, Johnny?
So, yeah. So we got with NFPA. We tried to do some studies just to find out exactly where we needed to start and how we needed to start. 80% of the U.S. fire agencies, again, they respond to these calls. Again, we're just talking about FDNY, who's a major metropolitan city, are now responding to interface fires. These guys don't have a clue of what they're doing. They just dumped firefighters on it, right, until they injured some firefighters. We can't continue to dump firefighters on these incidences without having some better training and technology and experience. So,
and that was two different, these assessments came out saying that the urban interface fire is our number one fire problem in America.
And we still don't have urban interface response standards. Isn't that kind of crazy? It's the number one issue. So that's what we're trying to do.
Good. So who responds to this, right? And you guys, this is interactive. If you come to our course and you sit and you're quiet, we're going to pick on you. But who, Pflugerville, who responds to this? In your district? Okay. What do you respond with?
I was in contact with brush trucks and
truck trucks. Right. All right. If your house is burning, that's pretty sufficient, right? What if all those houses are burning? We don't know, right? Because we're all fighting fires. As Randy mentioned, back in 2011, 2012, we were all over the state of Texas. Here in Central Texas, we had 15, 20 fires burning, and we ran out of resources. This was Tennessee, Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Started out looking like this, and a couple hours later, this is what it looked like. They burned every one of those homes. Right? And so, we're not going to stop that. We're going to provide our firefighters with better resources and training on how to keep themselves safer, and the communities and the citizens.
And these slides prove another point. So, and Chief Wade will attest to this, you know, in the beginning I thought, well, we're just training brush trucks and stuff, right? The periphery rigs, right? We're going to just train our specialty stuff on it. These become hands-on fires. Steiner Ranch, Pflugerville Fire, they were all hands fires. I mean, it wasn't just Pflugerville. We got up to Pflugerville, it was everybody. I mean, there were, you know, ESD-1 was there. I mean, you name it, right? These are all hands fires. So the 2011 quickly changed my mind about this. This particular fire in Gatlinburg, a good friend of mine, Tom Brewer, who's now on the Wildfire Task Force, was on the response to this from Charlotte, North Carolina. And it was funny the first time I met him because he was very emotional about talking about it because it was pretty fresh on him. He said, I can't believe this. They sent 100 Charlotte firefighters, none of us with any training whatsoever, and no respect to us to go out and fight a fire in the woods. We had never done that before. But that's who they're going to call on. So the point is this. It might not just be the more, in my opinion, the more prepared rural fire departments that are be dealing with this. It's going to be big city fire departments. That's where we're going to start reaching for our resources. And that's why the Austin Fire Department, I finally convinced them enough that I said, we have to train everybody because Steiner Ranch had Engine 3 and Engine 2 and Engine 11 showing up. You know, it's an all-hands fire.
I'll give you an example. In 2018, I was the unit duty chief when the camp incident, which destroyed the city of Paradise and the surrounding subdivision, started. I had the same. I'm just to the south of them and overseeing five counties. I was also serving as the Cal OES op area coordinator for a section. So I had the same burning conditions. I had to keep a bullpen up for response in the five counties that I was responsible for, but also send everything I could to them. The importance of this is that everybody that we're sending is trained to a minimum standard so that when they show up there and people are receiving them and putting them to work, that they're trained to that minimum standard so that they can do safe, competent response. So I sent four strike teams of dozers and four strike teams of hand crews and five strike teams of Type 3 engines and two strike teams of Type 1 engines and 31 overhead. And then I'm trying to do every dry and wet hire I could and get people back to work because we had the same conditions there. And so to shorten the reflex time, and the reflex time is key. So the more we get people trained up and have a bullpen of people that are qualified to a standard to be able to respond to that and truncate the time from when they get the assignment to where they get there, we can lessen that kind of damage right there when we do that. We're not going to save everything when you have those wind events coupled with fuel and slope, but we can be way more effective than that. And that's the goals and objectives in putting this together and coming here today and presenting that to everybody. Go ahead, Captain Davidson.
I think God loves Texas because in 2011, isn't it kind of shocking we look back at those fires and we didn't lose anybody? Right. Did we lose anybody? Does anybody remember? Did we have a single fire fatality from that? I don't know how we got away with that.
Yeah, let it go.
Right?
So this is just the initial group of the cadre that started, put it together. And these guys are from all over. Maine, Florida, Colorado, California, Washington State, serving with us here in Texas. Randy's looking for himself.
I was going to say there's four Texas guys in that group.
Yeah.
We now have a cadre of 30 people from all over the United States and Canada so that we have the ability to teach two or three of these at the same time with the contract that we just signed with the National Fire Academy, with what we're hoping to accomplish in collaboration here, and also with the FEMA grant to go out and teach our brothers and sisters out in Hawaii, and then with the Canadian government.
So just more of basically what we come in and teach. We do discuss leadership. We discuss incident activities, cover triage, the strategies and tactics, and then just the planning piece. And we share these things because this is what we do every day as firefighters. We just are adjusting that mindset to how do you do it to the urban interface. And we have all the tools necessary. We just package that in a two-day train-the-trainer, and then we follow that up with, or a two-day course, follow that up with a two-day train-the-trainer class.
So when we first started looking at the solution to the problem, we looked at everything. We didn't throw anything out. We looked at the NFA, their RUI programs. We obviously looked a lot at S215 stuff. I mean, we looked at everything. We brought everything in. There was three of us, and we just started really pounding through stuff. We were originally going to rewrite stuff. The Cal Fire RUI manual had just come out, and one of the guys in the original design team was one of the authors of it, and we were still going to rewrite it. But what we did instead is we took that manual, we sat down, and we made the information that they were using in California, because they had been fighting these fires more organized for a longer period of time, more successfully in some ways. And so we looked at the principles in there, and we kind of, I don't want to say we de-Californized it, but we kind of did a little bit. We made it to where the language in there and the strategies and tactics and stuff were applicable and understandable around the country.
Yeah, what we did, because right, wrong, or indifferent, when somebody hears the name California sometime, they get their guard up a little bit. But that book right there, the Cal Fire RUI Principle Book, is the Bible for wildfire urban interface firefighting. And the director and fire chief back then, and the one director, Joe Tyler, now, has graciously given us permission to use that and any other Cal Fire curriculum that we have, because we teach to an all-hazard, all-risk standard. And that's key in this. It's not one-dimensional wildfire alone. It's all-hazard, all-risk standard. It's tailored because of this environment that we constantly find ourselves in, with the incident within the incident. And so that way we can do safe, competent response. Go ahead, Captain Davidson.
You ready?
So the course is just broken down into three parts. There's a 10-hour online that everyone registers for. Once they arrive to the class, we do the basically just a refresher on day one and day two. But the way we do it, because again, we know we're teaching firefighters, we keep them in the class for 4 hours, and then we go out in the field and we start doing hands-on. Second day, we come back, you're in class for 4 hours, and then we go back out in the field and do hands-on. So that's the course. For the two-day course to basically become a train-the-trainer. The following 2 days, we go through the train-the-trainer. We'll take 24 students, and we'll walk them through the process of how we did what they just went through. And I say that because anytime we go anywhere, when we show up to whatever fire agency, we're using their fire trucks, the equipment that they have. We've worked through the community, and we've got homes that they actually respond to. So we go and use the homes that they respond to, the equipment that they respond with. We don't sell them something that's not applicable once we leave. So there is some time to put the course together, but regardless of where we go, it's tailored to your organization or the organization that we're at.
And our train-the-trainers are built for 24 students max, or 25 if you wiggle your way in.
And that's important in education. My wife's a retired educator, and class size is important for people to be. When you have too big of a class size, it affects in a negative way the students. And we want to make sure that there's retention so that they can go out and apply this when they go out of that and start training fire departments in their own agency.
That's 24 instructors are produced. That's what I'm trying to say on the train-the-trainer.
This just goes through some of the things we've talked about. SFACS is just an acronym that we teach them that guides and gauges their decision-making as they roll up on an incident. We kind of covered this portion here, the classroom portion. There's a final exam. The hands-on is the biggest thing, right? We're firefighters. That's what we want. We want to be able to get out there and know what we're actually going to be doing.
This is a beta test, and one of those is a Texas firefighter and two Colorado firefighters. We have tons of pictures. When we start training together, working together, just like everything else, right? We start to all of a sudden speak each other's language, which is a key critical element of this program.
And your master instructors are made up of folks who have done this, not just in training, but have been out there. And there's levels that go from the company to the chief officer in leadership, supervision, and command.
One thing about the hands-on, and we just have the opportunity to share this now. We went to Maui, unfortunately, a year later. But when we trained those guys on a Monday, I was receiving pictures on Wednesday night of the tactics that we had trained them on Monday. And those dudes were ecstatic. They're like, we were calling bump and run. They took a hose, shoved it in the back of the fire truck, and now they call it the Maui hook, because that's what they were running their hoses over. And they were able to deploy their hoses, save, they said, about six houses, kept the fire down to about an acre and a half. But it was that quick that those guys were like, this stuff works. So it's very, very usable, and it's immediately usable. Not only on wildfires, but we were in Florida. The BC I was talking to, he said, ah, Johnny, we don't have a wildfire issue. I said, no, but you got a beautiful mobile home park over here. How many of those do you burn? He goes, ah, 3 to 5 of them every time we catch it. I said, pretty cool. I said, you got those little spinny things in the ocean that come up. I go, well, what about the winds? We re-looked at his district, and he goes, I'll never drive through this district and not know that we don't have a problem. So it's not wildland. It's the different ways that you can use what we teach the men and women.
And now we have one of those Maui. Go ahead, Chief.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Joe. We now have one of those Maui firefighters who lived through that, is now one of our instructors.
Yes, he was just there with us. What's interesting is we'll have people from inner city fire stations, Denver, city of San Francisco, Boston, people that are showing up to this. And at first they come in and they go, why am I here? Why am I attending this? How does this pertain to me? And by the time they walk out of it, they realize it does pertain to them, because yes, 88% of them, sometime in their career now, are going to be responding to this kind of incident.
We discussed the number of students, the different formats that we use to deliver the course. When I say it's interactive, it is. We're studying the city's fire hydrant system. We study all these factors. So when we roll in as master instructors, we have knowledge of the organization. So we dump a lot of effort beforehand into teaching these courses. It's that important to us, and we want to leave that impression that we're not just coming in, throwing some information out there. No, we take, you know, pride in what we're delivering, and we want the firefighters that we go teach to know that. So when we leave, these guys are still are calling us back just for other information.
We need the Nacogdoches firefighters to know how to do bump and run in their hometown, but they also need to know how to do it in Fort Stockton too, right? You know, I mean, this is going to, once we get through this, this is a game changer, whether it's a grass fuel model or whether it's a timber model. It doesn't matter what the fuel model is. It's all in the strategies and tactics and doing them safely. It applies to every corner of this state.
And once we train somebody up to a train-to-trainer level, we're not going to leave you alone. We're going to still be alongside you. When you go do your first train-to-trainer with your firefighters in your home agency, we'll have a master instructor with you, because everybody here probably knows what it's like to teach something for the first time, just to make sure it goes seamless. And then after that, you just turn them loose.
Some of the hot stations, hot stands for hands-on training, we just took that and tried to condense it. Firefighters like acronyms. So we just use four stations. We do safety, we do strategies and tactics, we do triage. Pardon me, we've been talking for a couple of days. And I just drew a blank on the fourth one, Randy.
We do engine ops.
Sorry. But we break the class down into small groups, just because that allows us to do one-on-one with each individual. And then we just roll through these, show these guys and gals what this is and how to do it. And we just as many reps as we can to get this in there. And again, as small groups, it allows that one-on-one time with not only the students, but the students with the instructors. So again, we're talking about the training sticks. These are just different tactics that have been used. You can see the Maui hook down there in the bottom corner. Those guys did that. We told them, man, that's awesome. We'll put it in the presentation. And we share that this presentation is about 98% done, because we're consistently every year updating it and changing it to the information the students feedback to us through our surveys. So we find that important, because it's not just a canned program and we're done and we're teaching the same thing 10 years later. Now, we want it to stay current, because as we all know, our jobs are consistently changing as well.
Where was the big, that last urban interface fire in the Metroplex up there? I forget, I'm drawing a blank, I'm 61 years old now.
Springs.
So, how you doing, Ken? So, just so y'all know, when I watched that on TV, I literally almost had tears coming out of my eyes, because I knew exactly what they did. They did exactly what we're all trained to do, which was the wrong thing. right? They anchor in. And I was like looking at it going, oh my God, they anchored in. The fire went by them. You know how I know that? That's what happened to us in Steiner. That's what happened to Pflugerville. You know, and it wasn't bad. It was just what we do, right? When you see all these pictures of hose loads and stuff, we teach the students how to stay tactically agile. And when we say tactically agile, that's not just being able to stay loaded and moving fast. It's also being able to transition between the tactics that we teach, right? And so you'll see a lot of the pictures are based on hose loads and everything else. What we're teaching them is how to keep moving rather than doing what we all like to do, which was put up sticks, you know, and try to, we're going to hold the fire here. And it really is a change in mindset. And I think by the time these classes, like we just taught at Miami, by the time it's done and over with, our students are really, and that was 24 trainers we were mm-hmm. teaching. They were excited. They were really excited. They can't wait to go out and start teaching it to their crews because they're like, man, we never thought about this. And what Johnny was trying to say about the trailer park is that this is applicable if you do start having a conflagration for other reasons, not just an urban interface fire.
ORE is just the operational readiness exercise. That's the big drill that we put together on the end of the second day. So we kind of took the concept of crawl, walk, run. And so the ORE, everyone gets an assignment, and it's about an 80% pace. Takes about 25 minutes to roll through, but then that allows the students to take everything they just learned and put it into practice. This is actually where we get some of our best feedback because we're kind of pushing these guys and gals that are, especially company officers, making decisions. They'll show up and we'll give them conditions, right? The wind direction, fire conditions, and we'll start to amp this thing up. And everything's done over the radio, so now we're challenging the decision making. And so that's what's fun about this part. We've never had a single negative feedback about the ORE.
And so the interesting part about the ORE is, again, a lesson learned from Labor Day fires. Is how many of you in here have ever actually physically done a withdrawal? That's the problem. None of us have actually, our firefighters don't know what it's like to feel what a withdrawal is. So when Lake Travis safety officer came up to me and says, hey, what do you think? And I said, I think we're in trouble. He said, I'm thinking withdraw. And I said, I'm thinking the same thing. He gets on the radio and withdraws. And I go back to IC and I said, hey, we're doing, you know, I heard you authorize it. We're doing a withdrawal. And he goes, well, where is everybody? What do you think the crews were doing? They were loading their hose. They were down there loading their, I had to go down there and say, no, not that kind of withdrawal. You know, now we have terminology that will help that out in our profession. But back then we didn't. It's like, everybody, forget your hose. Just disconnect your hose and get the hell out of here. We hadn't, but nobody ever felt it. So part of the ORE has some of those elements that we lived here in Texas, you know, that I knew it needed to happen.
And they trained to a standard because it's all about reflex time. If you have to do a retrograde movement to where you got to pull back into a safety zone, it's all about how much time you have. If you have time, then you can you can take your stuff with you. But if you don't have time, sometimes that you can't. So you try to. But it's all about reflex time when you do that. And we talk about that. We talk about fire behavior and situational awareness, the importance of lookouts where there's possible danger, and conditions dictate the tactics on these things. Go ahead.
So just more of the ORE. So as we go in and we begin to work with each department, we also reach out to the different communities, if they're doing FireWise, if they're doing Ready, Set, Go. Right, we utilize those because those are areas that, as firefighters, it helps us. We may not have to send as many resources to those particular neighborhoods. So understanding what communities and what subdivisions have those programs already put in place is tremendous, which goes back to that planning piece, correct? This gentleman here
is a long story.
That was an amazing actor.
Ex-FDNY, ex-New York cop,
yeah.
And we used him as an actor. And he was the guy who would make that engine company suffer for pulling up in front of his house or not pulling up in front of his house.
So to honor him, we put him in our PowerPoint, in our program.
I want to gain support for your program, and you know, and this is a room full of leadership. Make the public a part of that as well, then they're going to become plank owners in what we're trying to accomplish right here as well, and gain understanding.
Ready?
So we do a media day if you want that. Again, it allows the media, allows the entire public and community to know what you're doing. Part of the things that we feel after some of these incidences is well, what have you done to prepare for this? Now we have an opportunity to get ahead of that and share that information. And then, as Chief just said, now you start getting stakeholders involved, and this program will begin to roll out, and you can share this with your neighbors and everyone across the state.
And this is a very important part right here. Because of the leadership in this room and appointed and elected officials, this here is your time right here to educate the members of the media and people within your communities on what we're doing and why. And then we have buy-in from them, and it's a lot easier then when you have to come to them and you say, I got a steak appetite for the flapjack bankroll. We need to invest more in this. In the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon talks, he makes a statement. He says, cast your bread upon the waters, and after a while it'll return back to you. The imagery there is about investment. And if you invest, you'll get a return for your investment. If you don't invest, you don't get a return for your investment. And so this is an opportunity for everybody in this room right here this day to be impact players for good in the program and for your agency. Go ahead, Captain Dave.
Thank you, sir. So we kind of covered the number of students and the instructors we can produce. Once you get those instructors, they're allowed, they have full access to all the materials, and they can go teach any of their mutual aid or automatic aid departments and members around. So that allows us to begin to slowly roll this thing out as we produce instructors, and then they go out and start the training program. So we can touch a lot more people. Sorry, sir.
The thing we're going to do is we're going to come to you no matter what the conditions are. We're going up to Nova Scotia and Canada in December to teach.
In the snow.
We have a grant for $800,000 for the first year, $500,000 the second, $500,000 the next year. We have to get the $800,000 spent by March 31st. So we're going to be in parts of Canada right now where it's going to be a little bit cold, but more than a little bit cold, but we're going to get it done.
Well, so just as the Chief was mentioning, there's grant funding. We have contracts. We just recently signed one with NFA. That's across the U.S. and Canada. And so if you're interested, if this is something that you would like to at least get more information on, send us your information. Leave your name, your telephone number, reach out to myself, Randy, or Chief while we're here, and let's see what we can do to kind of roll this program out and improve the safety of our firefighters.
And just to add one last thing, I think that's important. We're going to be presenting in March at the WUI conference, right? And the Wildfire Policy Committee, which also has Steve Pollack, Justice Jones, I have some other counterparts on that from Texas. They've been watching the progress of this thing. There might be a collaboration coming in the near future with them. And really, one of the big goals for this thing is to create a national standard. I'd love to be Texas to be number one on that thing. I think that would be the coolest part of all, is if Texas led the charge on a national standard. I have no doubt in my mind, after the 2011 Labor Day fires, that we all need this. Our firefighters need this. I can't say enough about what it felt like to be in front of a fire thinking that we knew what we were doing, to only find out you didn't know what you were doing, and basically having to get on the radio and say, forget that whole wildland gear stuff, you know. When it gets too hot, put your structural gear on. All the things that we have prepared through policy and training, Chief Wade was there with me, you know, prepared them, and then to find out that it came up very, very short was didn't feel very good. So I would encourage you all to think about your first name company officers, your incident commanders, those initial incident commanders on these incidents. We got to give them the tools on how to properly manage these things and how to keep their firefighters safe. Can't say that enough.
So, Commissioners, Chief Wisco, thank you all for allowing us to come speak on such a short notice. We truly appreciate it.
Can I hit the last slide, please? First, I would like to thank the Commission and everybody here for carving out time. This is important stuff. And so while we're trying to figure out the things in life that we're uncertain of, I think it's important to hang on to the things that we are certain of. What we will do with this here, and the outcomes that are already happening, is safe, be able to work safely in unsafe environments, and to bring our folks home and keep them out of burn centers and cemeteries. And that's the reason why I'm failing at retirement. It's worth the investment, And I truly believe that this state right here could be a trendsetter that will gather attention for other states to emulate and follow in the future. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, thank you very much for carving out time for us today. Appreciate it.
Ben. Gentlemen, thank you so much. That was a very informative presentation. I appreciate you guys bringing it forward to us. For the sake of time, it is 11 o'clock. We're going to take a 15-minute break. We will reconvene, and we will have any discussion about the presentation we just saw. Commissioners, please turn off your microphones.
was just FYI.
Chunk the hammer.
Yeah,
I
think that's what you guys call it.
Yes, sir, I saw the name. I'm going to
The time is 11:15, and this meeting of the Texas Commission on Fire Protection is back in session. Commissioners, when we left off, it was the presentation of item number 12, so I'll open the floor up for any further discussion on that.
I have a question.
Commissioner Johnson.
You were stating trainees can become a trainer. Would you call RTI a TRT instructor? So I was just wondering, with them going back to facilities, they're getting information from this training session, and then they can go out back to their organization and train. Is there some type of certification process so that when they go back, you know that they know the information that they're given?
We'll pass out a certification for the International Association of Firefighters for them to be able to take with them. And then they could go back to their departments and teach the firefighters in their stations as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Cotton.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment. Like many of you, I was on duty during the 2011 fires. Well, not on duty. I was a fire chief during the 2011 fires. And I know the impact that had on our community in Williamson County. And I helped create wildland teams in San Antonio and also in Round Rock, and I really think it's essential for structural firefighters to understand the dynamics of working in a wildland urban interface. And when we had the large fires in North Texas, the volunteers were using a bump and run technique, and the Forest Service was kind of chastising them because they used the National Wildland, you know, NWCG tactics. And there's a time and a reason why you do a bump and run attack. And they knew it because they understood the dynamics of the fires that they had up there, especially with the 50 mile an hour wind driving some of those fires. So I think this type of training would be beneficial to all structural firefighters across the state. So thank you very much for bringing it forward.
Sir, you made a very important point. When you talk about NWCG training, It's wildland specific. It's one-dimensional training. About 15 years ago, CAL FIRE went away from it, and that's where we add that training, but then we add what we call all risk or on the East Coast, all hazard training. Because of that, we can't afford to be one-dimensional. We have to. It's not within their purview to go in and do structure defense, rescue, evacuation. And they were actually could be subject to disciplinary action if they did that. But you had folks in the camp incident that destroyed Paradise, the Plumas National Forest engines and hand crews that were working hand by side with us and other local government agencies doing it. And so we took this piece out of that for the all hazard roll risk to be able, for exactly the reasons that you just illustrated. So thank you for your comments.
Commissioner Gleam.
Chief Tenick, this was great. Having been an instructor for the IFF in a different cadre, for our labor education cadre, I'm really proud of what our union is doing, what our IFF is offering, because as we were talking about during the break, the train-the-trainer kind of business concept is not what we've done from the labor education side, the human relations side. We made sure that our instructors were the ones going out and providing that material. And what we're doing here, what y'all are doing, what y'all put together, and I've talked to Chief Denzer, Rain, and I've talked about this for a number of years, but what y'all have put together from our union is something that's going to go out to all firefighters in that train-the-trainer concept. I'm glad that we pivoted, and I'm glad that we've been able to recognize the value in that concept so that we can get as many instructors that are trained and qualified to be teaching this, but to get the material out there and to really be a great and tremendous resource. So I'm proud of what the IFF has done. I'm proud to represent the IFF, but I'm proud of what y'all are doing to represent us, and so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Vandegrift.
From the State Fire Marshal's Office, where we investigate the line of duty deaths, I'm 100% behind this. And also from being from a rural volunteer fire department, we have the opportunity as a commission, especially with the reciprocity deal, that the SFFMA and a lot of these smaller departments that are doing these wildland things as well and running into these other areas, going to these bigger cities, to have an impact with them. And I think I'm 100% behind this, because it's not just going to affect these bigger departments. It's going to get into those smaller rural, the picture where the guy's running with that gear on. I remember that fire out of Cactus, and that's what took one of those firefighters, was trying to outrun a wildland fire in 60 mile an hour wind with that gear. And so I 100% behind this.
I thank you for your words, and sir, you bring up a really good point. I got my start in a small fire district when I was 14 years old, called Penn Valley Fire Protection District. And back then, as long as I was an adult, I could go in with everybody. And I got broke in by retired San Francisco firefighters that were World War II, Korean War veterans, and really taught me the job and gave me the passion for it. I've also been on many serious accident review teams, both on the management side and also on the labor side. And what happens when we have somebody have a serious accident or fatality, as probably almost everybody in this room knows, is the first place that they go is to their training records. And they look at what's in it, and they look at what's not in it right there as well. And so there's an insufficiency nationwide in providing this kind of training. And simply, we just need to set our firefighters up for success in battle. Thank you, sir, for those comments.
Commissioners, any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, just for point of reference, they've extended an invite for me to come out to New Orleans in January. They're going to actually conduct this program over a two-day period. I want to go out and kind of see it, walk through it with them, get a better understanding of it, and then we hope to work with the Teagues and these guys to move this along a little bit. So there'll be more about this in the coming months.
So maybe an update at our February meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
And appreciate your time and traveling out here to visit with us today and share this.
I appreciate the opportunity, and everybody have a blessed Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Okay, we will move on to item 13.
Discussion and possible action on the proposed changes to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 449, Head of Fire Department.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, this is for final adoption. This is the rule change that would provide a few more options for folks trying to get certified as head of department. You'll see the specific changes for that in 449.3 and again in 449.203. And then you'll also notice a lot of grammatical corrections throughout the document. So this, if you adopt this today, it would be with the changes that are reflected in the document in your notebook.
Okay. Commissioners, any other discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve. I have a motion by Commissioner Smith, second by Commissioner Coatney. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. And while we're on that, if you're here for head of department, make sure you sign in back there so you get credit for being here today. Somebody told me to remind you of that. Got it, Rick. All right, we'll move on to item 14.
Discussion and possible action on 37 TAC Chapter 435, firefighter safety.
Chairman, Commissioners, going to ask Rick Wallace, our Compliance Division Chief, to make a brief presentation. As you know, we've been talking about it for a couple of years now. NFPA has started retooling and combining a lot of their standards. This is the first one. It's 1970. It was released in late September. It has a huge impact on us here in Texas. 419, the law we get our authority from, outlines that we will enforce the most recent standard of NFPA when it comes to protective clothing and SCBAs. This 1970 combines those two and has made some changes. Rick's going to give you about a three-hour dissertation of it. He's read it. He's had a lot of great sleep in the last couple of months. No, actually, I think probably a short presentation and then questions. I don't think we're going to be able to make any decisions today, but I think we start some very necessary conversation today. Transparency.
Sure.
Good morning. My name is Rick Wallace. I'm the Division Chief over Compliance. And you guys should have a briefing in your packet. This is going to be really sweet, short, and then hopefully lots of questions. That's kind of the big thing, is try to answer as many questions. And I can do what Chief Wisco hates and say, I don't know. Okay, so NFPA started a consolidation project some time back. It's gone through the curriculums, kind of the first step, and then they moved into the EERS, the emergency response side. The first one that came out for us that affected us directly was NFPA 1970. As the gentleman said earlier, it combined four standards, which is up there. Three of those affect us directly. They affect our Texas government code, and they also affect our Texas administrative codes. That's NFPA 1971, which is the PPE manufacturer and how they test it, put it together, and get it ready for everybody. 1981 is the same thing for the SCBA, and then 1982 is the PASS devices. Okay. What we're not going to worry about is 1975. That's the station wear standard. We don't have any legislative authority for that, but it's thrown in there. The great thing is, thank you, they broke it down into chapters for us, so it was real simple. Chapters 1 through 4 is just your general stuff, your administration, general stuff, definitions, so on and so forth. Chapters 5 through 9 cover the 1971 standard, the old 1971 standard, which is the PPE. The next chapters of that would move on through the other ones. Let's talk a little bit about 1971. There we go. So this standard became effective September 18th, 2024. So by our administrative rule, we should be enforcing this starting on that date. There's a couple of caveats to that. Number one, you guys were gracious enough to pass a rule here a couple of years ago to give you authority to give a 365-day period, grace period, I guess would be the best way to put it, for any new standard coming in. But we also have another couple of caveats to that. The PPE manufacturers, NFPA gave them 12 months to comply to the new standard. So even though it came in, it's not, you don't have to comply with the standard, or they don't have to comply with the new testing standards until September 18, 2025, which that would be in line with the 12-month period that was passed by y'all a couple of years ago. Where we're running into a little bit of a problem is 1981 and 1982, which the PASS and the SCBA. They gave the manufacturers, NFPA, up to 18 months to comply with it. So depending on how long it takes for the testing processes and get it out there, we could see up to 18 months for the new standard SCBA and PASS devices to hit the markets for the fire departments to begin to purchase. So that could provide a problem if we stick to that 12-month rule that you guys have. That's going to be a lag period in which fire departments would not be able to make a purchase. And that's, my math is right, that's 6 months or half a budget year that we would have an issue of departments not being able to purchase an SCBA if NIOSH doesn't get the process through and get those certified. A couple other things with the PPE. I met with UL and Intertech this last week and kind of got their take on that side of the world, since it's mostly the testing and the standard and everything to it. They didn't seem to be overly concerned. Their big thing was the manufacturing, now they're allowed to do the tags for the PFAS levels and talk about 100 parts per million or less is kind of a standard pseudo recognition or accepted level for PFAS in garments. That's not anything that's set by an industry trade. That's just kind of a pseudo, this is where we're shooting for type thing, or PFAS-free elements. They also allowed a new testing standard predominantly for the textile portion of the PPE. They can use the old standard, testing standard, or they can test it to something called the Okeotex 100 supplement standard. And that has a much higher requirement. It has to do with the restricted substance limits, but it is an optional testing. UL Laboratories indicated to me that they would not offer that service currently. So depending on what the manufacturers decide to use or how you decide to spec your gear, that's how it would work. Of course, hoods, when you buy new hoods under the new standard, they'll have to be particulate blocking. The test strength, they kind of made that one a little better for everybody. It's kind of cool. When they come to the into the test strengths now, they have to put it through two washings and two UV exposure limits before they test it for tear strength, which in the past they just took it right off the shelf brand new and tested it for it. So at least they're getting a little more realistic idea of that gear out there that they're testing it. So that was kind of a good improvement, I think, personally for it. They improved the removal of the contaminants in it. The testing, of course, the THL that gentleman touched on, and the evaporative resistance test. I want to go and just say, because this is a kind of a tough spot for me, it's a little bit of a rub. Your garments, the TPPE level is still the same for garments and for gloves, which is 35. Hoods are still at 20. And we see a whole lot of burns that are associated with hoods. I'm just throwing that out there. So some of the challenges that we're going to have with this. The 12-month grace period to comply. So we have up to 12 months for it to comply with the PPE. The particulate hoods, if your department isn't currently using the particulate hoods, that's going to be an increased budgetary item for you, as well as the additional test that is required to particulate hoods. You have to do either what's called a lighter bulb test or a smoke test for the particulate hoods. So that's an additional cost if you're doing using a third-party vendor or purchasing the equipment to utilize it in-house. And then, of course, having to train the guys to the additional testing standards. So that's some challenges that we have to look at kind of going down the road for that. NFPA 1975 was chapters 10 through 14. Again, we're not worried about those. And then 15 through 19 is a standard on 1981 for PPE. 18 months for the manufacturers to have to comply with the new standard. They can't sticker anything at that point. So we're looking at a six-month period there that we're going to have a little bit of a challenge to work with departments and stuff to be able to handle that. They did improve the intrinsic safety devices to it. The more electronics you're getting, the more concern there is with explosive atmospheres and electrical-based atmospheres and arcing. So they improved that to meet the industry standards. Okay. They improved the integration, and what I'll talk about integration is the electronics integration, so it's the integration of your portable radios into the unit itself. They've improved the standard in which that works. Predominantly, it's a non-plug-in. It's more of a wireless integration. They also are requiring the soft goods on the air packs to be removable for cleaning. That's going to be a little bit of a challenge that we'll talk about moving forward. The end of service time and the heads-up display. This is a change. Historically, it's been 35% of the bottle. The bell goes off, you know you're supposed to go out. Now they're setting the standard to the percentages of the pressure of the cylinder. So in other words, and if you look at your booklet, it breaks it all down, but it's by percentage, by the amount of pressures in the bottle. Now, all of our firefighters have done these tests, and they know their work time consumption and all of this. That may change a little bit based off the cylinders, or if you're working with a department that has different pressured cylinders as far as the time that they have remaining in their cylinders, when that cylinder goes off for them to exit the building. Okay? So that's something that will have to be worked with as we go through it and get there. Okay? I'm not going to go big into that because we could talk all day about that. We just got to be aware of it. I reached out to NIOSH as far as the testing standard and when, how they would go about it. Everybody knows the 13 to the 19 issue with NIOSH. NIOSH decided in 13, when the 13 edition came out to the 19 edition, they decided that they were going to accept SCBAs for the new standard during a certain period of time for a certain number of days. Then they would close it, and then they would release that certification all at one time at a later date. I tried to reach out to NIOSH to find out if they were going to stick with that standard or if they were going to go back to the way they used to do it, first come, first serve. I have not heard from back from them yet. So that'll also be a consideration for us. Some of the challenges to the SCBA, of course, again, that 18-month period. Okay, so we can talk about 1850, which will come out next year. It always falls, it's a lag year from the 1970. 1850 is going to be the 1851. Our assumption, and I use that word assumption loosely, is that the 1852, which will be the 1850, which is the cleaning and maintenance of the air packs, probably looking at an enhanced cleaning probabilities similar to that of the PPE. For the soft goods. That's the whole reason they're putting removable soft goods on it, is so that stuff can be changed out and increase the health. And I think we've heard most of the guys say, why do you guys look at my gear and tell me it's dirty and you don't say anything about the air pack? No. Careful what you wish for. Okay. Those are probably the biggest ones, is just getting there and getting to the NIOSH certification, finding out how they're going to use their certification process and what packs are going to hit out there. 1982 is the 20 to 24 chapters. There's not any huge specific changes to the pass units. They just further solidified the universal tones for the alarms. That was basically all they did. They messed with some wording on it there to solidify that and make it a little stronger. So universal tones regardless of what pack you have. And that is the end of my presentation. There's my pretty pictures, and I'm open to any questions you guys may have.
Commissioners, any questions? Commissioner Cooper?
I have a comment. I didn't even say.
Just had that look.
Okay. Mine's more of a statement related to the SCBA straps. When we did the research for Southwest Research on the EV and lithium-ion battery contamination, the PPE we were able to successfully clean to a certain limit, but a very high effectiveness for both liquid CO2 and extraction. The SCBA straps we weren't able to clean, and they had the most amount of contamination because they're so porous. And we weren't able to clean because of the construction of the pack. So they're going to be removable. I think that'll add something that's very beneficial to us. The other piece you talked about was on the hoods. We didn't even evaluate the hoods, and we know the exposure is very high from the hoods, and the hoods don't get cleaned as often as the SCBA, or as the PPE does in some cases and in some departments. So I think these standards are going to be beneficial to the safety of the firefighters.
Can you give me a list of those departments that aren't cleaning as often? I think you're absolutely right.
That's not fact. I recant that statement. I'll stick with the others that I made.
No, I'm just kidding. You're absolutely right. It is going to improve the cleaning of the air packs and the contamination. I think as far as what we need to start the discussion on is how are we going to go about looking at this standard and looking at the enforcement side of it moving forward, and then start thinking into the other standards as they start to come out, because 1850 is going to be a much larger concern to us when it comes out next year. Not that this is less important, but the impact falls more on the manufacturers than it does the commission as far as all the work that has to be done. You know, it's real easy. You write your specifications, meets the standard, and you send it off to the manufacturer, and they say, sure, we'll take care of that. So,
commissioners, any other questions or comments? What direction do you need from us?
You know, we put it on there for discussion and possible action. I think some of us remember the disaster that the last version of 1851 was, and there was a lack of transparency and education, maybe. So it is my recommendation that we use today to initiate the education for everybody, for you all as the body that's going to have to make a decision, for the fire service. In our various road shows over the next couple of months, we're going to be talking about this. I think it needs to be talked about. The law is the law. We're going to have to enforce it, but I think we need to do our piece to educate everybody. So I would like to see us come back in February with this on there and consider the action as far as the implementation date and things like sure. that. Give this time to marinate and everybody understand it, and us a chance to answer questions.
This was a shot across the bow.
I guess, but hopefully it's perceived as a friendly, sure. transparent shot. But we're trying to do a better job educating them. We don't want to just throw this out there and say, you got to do this.
We want to make sure staff has enough time to do all the hard work.
And I feel comfortable. We'll get some feedback. Between now and then. If not, maybe today. I mean, we've got a room full of people. They might already be so.
I see one standing up right behind
him. Shocking.
Well, hey, I'm on the committee. Hello, Commissioners. Jim Reedy for the TSAFF again. And I am on the committee, and as Commissioner Buford is also on the committee. Rick did a fantastic job reviewing that. I just have a couple of additions from the committee side of it. Helmets also are going to have soft good removal, and they're going to have a timed soft good removal for the manufacturers. So the manufacturers have to build the helmets so that those soft goods can be removed and replaced in a certain period of time, and I want to say it's it's like a minute, something to that effect. So it's going to pop out, and you should be able to pop it back in with a very minimum of training. So, and that is so we can get them to encourage our brothers and sisters to clean the inside just like they're hopefully cleaning the outside. But that leather and all those soft goods, if we don't clean them, it just absorbs right into your scalp and your skin. So it was an area of concern for the firefighters on the committee, and we mandated that too. Currently, the particulate blocking hoods, just as a point of information, the sales run about 70%, 71% nationally. People already have particulate blocking hoods, and there's still probably 29% of the regular two-layer hoods. Not necessarily in Texas, but we are very compliant here with that aspect of it and the cancer prevention side of that. And that is a minimum standard, so if you have a two-layer hood that's still within the 10 years, you don't have to throw that out. This is just a minimum construction standard going forward. So, and I've gotten some calls about that, so I figured I'd like to clarify that here. So, on the hazardous side, this document, Rick will probably tell you too, I got my book at home. It's 400 pages. I'd like to tell you I read it, but I didn't. So, but Part of that is there's a hazardous substances section in there, a rather lengthy one. And to simplify for people, the members of the committee wanted to implement the OCATEX 100 standard as that particular list, because most of the manufacturers already follow that, but NFPA does not allow that kind of name recognition within their standards. So that's why you'll see that big list of hazardous substances. And the hood testing, I know it's going to be an issue going forward, but San Antonio, we solved that hood testing. We do it in-house with a lighted head form, a clear glass or whatever head form like you can find in anywhere, and light bulb on the inside, LED light bulb. And that works really well. And it's cheap, and our in-house guy does it. So there are ways to solve these problems rather than having to pay a fortune to send it out. So, and that's all I got, unless you had a question for somebody on the committee. This the committee runs about, I think right now we're 14 or 15 firefighters on a 32-person committee. So the fire service, the firefighter actually is very well represented in here, and we do flex our muscles every once in a while to get what we want. So we have, and in Texas, there's three of us from Texas on the committee. So Buford, myself, and, four. Buford, myself, Tim Tomlinson from Addison, and Jeff Stahl from Austin is a subject matter expert. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Commissioners, any other comments or questions for staff? So we'll just look for something in our February meeting. Okay, we'll move on to item 15.
Proposed rule review for the following 37 TAC Chapter 423 Fire Suppression and 37 TAC Chapter 425 Fire Service Instructors.
Chairman and Commissioners, these are the next two rules up for review. Your wishes on how you want to move forward. Staff is already starting to look for the grammatical things.
Commissioners, any thoughts? Okay.
Same to advisory.
That's what I'm looking for.
I know you went for it. Okay, you knew that motion.
That'd be great.
We move that we send this over to firefighter advisory for a review.
Second.
Okay, that we send both over to firefighter.
Yes,
okay. I have a motion by Commissioner Smith, second by Commissioner Glenn, that we send both of these items to Firefighter Advisory Committee for further review. Is there any other discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor of that, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes.
Sorry, motion. That's
all right. I'm sorry.
Ron, agenda item number 14, what was the final, did you?
We took no action.
No action.
Waiting on staff to bring information back to the February meeting.
Okay, so we're going to table this?
Well, we didn't table, we just took no action.
Took no action, okay.
Yeah.
Just want to clarify.
I mean, we can table it if it makes you feel better, that way we make for
Yeah,
for
I think
certain.
It might come across better on the meeting minutes, just
so moved.
If y'all don't.
No, we want to keep the attorneys happy.
No.
All right. So I'm back in opening up item 14, and I have a motion by Commissioner Glenn,
second
by Commissioner Coney, that we table that to bring back to our February agenda. Is there any other discussion on that? Although seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Thanks for keeping me in line. All right, item 16.
Report and possible action.
Oh, hang on.
I apologize. Can you repeat who the motions were?
Probably not.
First.
That's second, the second one. Motion by Commissioner Smith, second by Commissioner Cody. I mean, yeah.
Glenn.
I'm sorry.
Glenn.
Smith and Glenn. See? Glenn, and that was to send to firefighter advisory.
Frank got me all discombobulated up here.
Sorry about that.
That's all right, man.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. You good?
We're good.
All right. Now we'll move to item 16.
Report and possible action from the Ad Hoc Subcommittee regarding the selection and appointment of candidates for current vacancies on Health and Wellness, Curriculum and Testing, and Firefighter Advisory Committees.
We're right around here, or somebody can advance the slides in a second.
Okay,
hold on, Greg, just give me a second. So, good afternoon, or almost afternoon.
And what I'll do is I'll talk about the health and safety, our health and wellness committee first. And the reason for that is because there's just one vacancy on that. If you recall, the last meeting we went through, we established the list. Thanks, Chris. Down button. Oh, okay. Good thing you told me that. We established the list. We established an actual two-year standing list. We have one vacancy on that. So the person who is next out on the list to be appointed to the Health and Wellness Committee is Michael Anderson. He was number 5 on the standing list that we have. Oops. All right, so next, we're going back to the committee selection. Just a reminder, we've had some changes on the committee. There's been, when Chief Wilson left the commission, we brought Chief Wade on to the ad hoc committee. So it's Chief or Commissioner Brandon Wade, Commissioner Michael Glenn, Commissioner Michael Johnson, Commissioner Tim Smith, and myself. This is basically the rule that applies when you're selecting the members. It talks about the number, and it's no more than 5 recommended candidates for a single vacancy. And if there's multiple vacancies, within the next 120 days, you select 2 other people. As you can see from this standing list on the vacancies for curriculum and testing, we have 2 existing vacancies, and then we have 3 anticipated vacancies in 2025, which we've established last meeting to be January of 2025, or January of the year. So what we did is we went about this. We advertised for the positions using the electronic application that Commissioner Johnson and the IT staff had created. It was open for a period of time. 62 individuals submitted their names and backgrounds for consideration. The areas that we weighed for this particular area is experience in curriculum, test development and training, current and past program development, related certifications beyond just the TCFP, and overall experience in the fire service. Based on the policy that I showed to you, we had to at least have a list of 13 names to bring forward for the full commission to review. We decided to go ahead and put 15 in there since we didn't know what type of attrition would come up over the 2-year standing list, so that's what we established. And I know you can all read this very well, but this is a listing in order of selection of the names of the individuals who were out of those 62 who came to the top 15. And Mr. Chairman, I can read those to you if you'd like for the public, or just this be submitted and turned into you anyway. Is there a requirement, Frank, for the names to be read out loud?
No.
No? Okay. So that'll be a public list anyway. So that's the list of 15, and we're recommending them be selected. It was unanimous amongst the commissioners who are on the ad hoc. We recommend these to be selected in the order that they're listed here. Moving on to the next grouping. The next grouping for us was for the advisory committee. We had 103 individuals submit their names for consideration. We evaluated their backgrounds, again, with this overall experience in the fire service to include leadership positions that were held, current and past assignments they had, related certifications beyond TCFP, and experience working with a governing body we felt were relevant to these roles. Following the same process, we looked at the number of vacancies we had. You can see that we have a total of 5 in 2024, and we have 3 coming up in 2025. So that led us with having to go through the numbers that we had, and similar to what we've done on all the past ones, we wanted to place these after we picked them up and by rank order, we wanted to place it on a 2-year standing list. On this one, we needed to do 19 names to meet the requirements of the internal policy, and we went ahead and selected 20 names for that. See, these are 20 names for the committee, the advisory committee recommendations. Again, Mr. Chairman and commissioners, for your consideration, these are rank ordered by the ad hoc committee, and we recommend that they be taken in that order to fill these spots. Chief DeYeer, you'll note, is on here. He is currently the advisory board chair. The reason he is placed at number 6 is the first 4 will be selected for 2024. His vacancy comes up in 2025, and we didn't want there to be a gap in the person who is over the advisory board if that's supportive of the full commission. Are there any questions related to these?
I can't see.
Commissioners, any questions? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion to accept the list as has been produced by the committee.
Second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Glenn. Are there any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Commissioner Coveney, thank you and the committee for your work on this. I certainly think we're exceeding the bar for Sunset by the transparency of this process. I know you guys put a ton of work into this.
The commissioners will notify all the applicants tomorrow on the outcome of this and provide them with the list. And the list will be included in the minutes of your meeting.
Okay. All right, we'll move to item 17.
Discussion and possible action on public request concerning 37 TAC Chapter 469 Technical Rescue.
Chairman and Commissioners, after October 1 when we started the rope rescue certification, I received an email, a complaint that we were not recognizing the already existing IFSAC rope rescue certification that's out there. And in fact, we were aware of it, and somehow or another there was a sentence left out of the rule language. So reviewing all that, talking to the staff, we have chosen to go ahead and honor that because we know that was the intent, and it's an IFSAC cert. I mean, there's no reason not to. But we need to clean up the rule language, which clearly is going to take upwards of 2 meetings or 6 months. So we're not going to delay folks being able to get the cert, but we do need to start the rule change process. So what you're seeing here is the current rule with the proposed changes to add a sentence. The first one's in 469.3. You see at the bottom there, it talks about possessing a valid documentation for awareness and level through IFSAC. And then the other is on the last page, 469.203, under 2C, the same language. So two minor language changes. It has not impacted anybody because we've updated the system, and as soon as they apply and they present that, they're eligible. But we want to change the rule and make sure it's consistent. Okay. Again, this is for the one-year provisional period. We'll be halfway through the provisional before the rule actually says what it should say, but the intent was there, and there's no reason not to honor this.
Send this back to Kirk and Montesquieu?
I don't think so. There's no reason for this to go back to curriculum and testing. I mean, the intent.
No, the intent was there. It came from them with the intent. Yeah. So it came from the ad hoc.
We just need to clean up.
And the sentence got left out.
Okay.
Okay. What's our action?
To approve.
This would be going to publication.
It'd go for publication. It's still got to go out because we're changing the rules. Right. So still, we got to follow the process and send it to the register and come back at the next meeting and vote to approve it.
Okay. So, no. So, commissioners, any other discussion on that? So, wait, we need to take action today.
You need to adopt it for proposal.
Got it. So, any other discussion? Seeing none, do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Vandergriff, second by Commissioner Coveney. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Okay, we'll move on to item 18.
Matters from the agency chief, including A, update regarding agency duties and responsibilities, B, decision of the agency chief in contested cases and consent orders, C, status regarding division functions, including training approval and testing, test administered training approvals, record reviews, and online training audits, as well as certification and professional development, training applications, IFSAC seals issued, certifications issued, training facilities, curriculum development, library resource requests, and compliance, biennial inspections, compliance officers training, issues involving regulated entities, and finally, information technology, public website design, farm and phyto improvements, CAPS, IT security policy, and service requests.
Commissioners, a couple of things under A. First, I want to introduce our new executive assistant, Yazzie Chavez Estrada here. Eventually she'll be the one you're working with through these meetings and travel and things like that, and we're getting her trained up right now by the very best, and she'll be better than me at this by the time we get her ready. But Hopefully she comes back after today. You're sitting in some new chairs. We were able to purchase some new chairs. We had a little bit of money left over at the end of the budget year. The rule is you spend it all, and so we did. So make sure you're comfortable in the chair. We could have gave you a warning before you sat down, but just get them the way you like them, and hopefully they're nice. The IT guys did an incredible job. You'll notice the addition of the monitors in here. A couple things have happened recently that allowed us to go ahead and do this. After more than a year of conversation with Texas Facilities about this building and this room, 3 weeks ago they contacted me and said that they've done a lot of research, and there are a couple things that need to be changed about this room to make sure we're in compliance with the fire code. But they don't want to build any walls. They want to leave the room just like we're seeing it right now. I was very excited about that because that was our original intent all along, and we were having to work through the process. What you will see someday, the main doors there will be reversed to swing out so we comply with the fire code. There will be an addition of another egress door on the other side of the room back there. And they're working on a design right now for a dais so we can get rid of the tables in here. I can almost assure you there will be a supplemental LAR request for the funding that's going to be required to do that. I anticipate to have those numbers here pretty quick. In fact, I've had an email since we've been sitting here with some more information from them. But this room will pretty much stay the way you see it. So IT got the green light to go ahead with the monitors, and we're working on making the AV part better. And hopefully someday we're all the way up to speed with cameras and all of that, so we could even have commissioners join remotely or audience join remotely. So we're making some progress. We're getting there. We just finished the renewal season. That is always an annual exercise and futility for us. The staff, again, does an amazing job. Certification, testing staff, working with compliance, and most importantly, IT, because for some reason our system struggles when we have two or three big departments hit renew all at the same time, and it's nobody's fault, it's technology, and we had that issue occur a couple times. The result of that is because we had a few interruptions in our website, we delayed imposing any late renewal fees until November the 8th, because we recognized that we did have some problems and we tried to work through all that. As of today, everything's up and running the way it should be, but kudos to the IT staff and everybody else involved in getting folks renewed and keeping the system up and running. We are fast approaching the December deadline for the cancer awareness training. Compliance told you in August that we were aware of quite a few departments that were behind on that, and we were working with them. As we sit here today, we're at about 17% of the regulated entities that are not 100% compliant, but I can tell you that we're working with all of them, and in the majority of the cases, these are department-managed fire academies that are currently in progress, and it's part of the curriculum they're going to complete before the end of December. So we're staying on top of that. We're going to make sure everybody has them. But overall, very successful, and everyone's been compliant with a couple of hiccups.
I was saying on that, as a head of a department, I appreciate the little nudge by the regional compliance officers. I mean, it's great just to, because that stuff will sneak up on you, and it's like, oh, we're out of time. So I appreciate what they're doing to keep an eye on that for us, to keep us in the curves.
They do a great job. And the State Fire Marshal earlier in her report mentioned the return of the LODD symposium. We have partnered with them and the other agencies listed. Just so you know, the statute allows us to spend some money on training, saw fit to cover any AV expense there instead of the fire chiefs having to cover that. They're making the space available under their contract for their conference that week, so the agency will be covering that part of it. That's going to be our role in this. But I think this is a worthwhile conference. We're excited to bring it back and see what the interest is so we can continue with that. The last thing I really have under A is I wanted to give you an update on where we're at with the SFFMA reciprocity, and this will be pretty short. We've made a great deal of progress. So basically, there are five phases from this. You all asked in May if we could look at this. We started, there was an exploration phase that was us working with SFFMA just to wrap our heads around what we were going to be looking at, what the challenges were going to be. There was a submission and review period. They submitted basically all their information with their instructional and written exams, skills exams. Staff has worked with them. They've verified that everything mirrors what we're currently doing. We had no expectations of anything other, but we needed to put eyes on it. And we just completed the written certification process. We verified the all the JPRs are covered, and JPRs that are not covered by skills are met through the written testing. So we're making great progress. What's left will be the rule language review and obviously some recommended changes to the rules, and the creation and entrance of a MOU between us and SFFMA. And just as a reference, we do the exact same thing with TEKS on the Pro Board certification, the agreement there. So we want to have a level playing field, keep everybody in the same place. So currently, we're shooting for June of 25 to have everything done and have this reciprocity in place, at least for the basic firefighter, and then we'll start working on the others. That could occur faster, and I'll keep you updated, but there's been a lot of work done. We appreciate the working partnership and cooperation with SFFMA, and I think at the end of the day, this is going to be good for the fire service as a whole. So I just wanted to give you that update. Happy to answer any questions on any of that I've talked about so far. When you look at B under 18, decisions on contested cases, we're still batting 1,000. We haven't had any. We've had a lot of conversations, and we've been able to work through a lot of issues without any appeals or contested cases taking place. So kudos to compliance and legal and everybody else that gets involved in that. And so far, we believe everybody's happy with the outcome. 18C. Within your notebook, there are reports, as always, from all the different divisions. Happy to answer any questions you might have about anything you read in there. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in testing. There's a lot going on in certification. Compliance is busier. They got more work than they can keep up with. And that takes me back to the LAR, and we're asking for more folks over there because we're just inundated with injury investigations and other things, and we just need some more staff. But the staff we have, they're doing an outstanding job of trying to stay on top of that. I can't say enough about it. With that, unless there's any questions, that's the end of my report.
Commissioners, any questions? Okay, Chief Whiskey, thank you for that report. All right, we will move to item 19.
Personal matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, and duties of the agency chief. Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a closed session to discuss agenda item 19.
It is 12:06 p.m. on November 21st, 2024. At this time, the commission will go into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 551.074 to discuss personnel matters under agenda item 19.
I would like to request Amanda remain.
I'm getting there.
Okay, sorry.
You're reading ahead. The commission requests that all non-commissioned members leave the room except for legal counsel, Mike Wisco, Amanda Kahn, and Yazzie Chavez. And before you leave, you're welcome to stick around and see when we open this back up. But if you don't, I understand it's lunchtime. Thank you for being here today. Thanks for staying with us through this. I hope you got some takeaways and have a happy Thanksgiving. Safe travels to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sure. Oh, so then I'm not doing this bottom part on the form.
Yeah, you will. We will have to go.
Well, it just says no action was taken in closed session.
Yeah, no, you still have to read
okay.
that because.
And then you do item 19.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That's just saying that y'all
are good. Okay, I'm with you.
Okay.
Follow directions.
Amanda? The motion is to increase the maximum amount to the LAR, or an LAR to increase the maximum amount to the top of the group range.
You're hard working now.
I'm an officer.
I take mine off tonight.
It is 12:40 p.m. on November 21st, 2024, and the commission is now in open session No action was taken in closed session. So we are still in item 19.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we submit an LAR in this next year to increase the agency chief's maximum allowable amount up to the top of the Group 5 salary range, which is currently $197,415.
Second.
Okay.
Have a motion by Commissioner Glenn, second by Commissioner Buford. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay. We will move to item 20.
Adjourn the meeting.
I will entertain a motion to do so.
Bye.
Have a motion by Commissioner Coben. Second by Commissioner Wade. Is there any other discussion? Gentlemen, before we break, you all have happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays, and we will see you back here in February. And this meeting is adjourned. Oh, wait. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. This meeting is adjourned. The time.